Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm here with Daniel M.
Hello, hello.
Daniel runs New Churches within the brands of Lifeway Leadership, and we're both really happy to be here, mostly not because of each other. It's mostly our guest today. We do have fun.
Yeah, and we're going to have even more fun today with
yes.
Tammy.
So our guest today is Tammy Heim, and she has been with us from the very beginning. And I do mean like 5 years ago, she was a person that I approached to be on our advisory council when we were first starting up with Lifeway Leadership. We were first starting up with Ministry Grid. From there, she also was heavily involved in the development of the competencies of Leadership Pipeline. Mm. So in a very real way, she is greatly responsible for the direction that we've gone in the last 5 years. If you don't like it, talk to Tammy. Apart from all the wonderful things that she does with us, she is currently the CEO of Christian Leadership Alliance. And what they do is actually is quite similar to what we do, in that they will equip and enable leaders in the Christian nonprofit space and just provide ongoing development for those senior leaders as well as their teams. And so that's a wonderful ministry that she's currently doing. In the past, she's been CEO of Borders when it was good.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
I'm just saying. And Thomas Nelson, VP there, and a couple other things along the way. So I told Daniel I wanted to wing her bio because she is a friend and we know her and love her so much. So thank you so much for being here. This should be a really fun conversation today.
I am so looking forward to it. I'm so passionate about this topic. And it's been such a joy for me to see the pipeline evolve over these past 5 years, and just knowing the significant difference it can make in church leadership and for the church, and anything that we can do to strengthen the church, rise up the bride of Christ, I'm all in. So,
absolutely. So, Daniel, you want to take our first question?
Definitely, definitely. So this is one of our podcasts that's leading up to our succession conference in the fall. And the first one is, our first question is, why is leadership development important in the context of succession?
Well, that is a great question. And I'd have to say it's kind of everything.
Hmm.
I think it's so serious when you hear people say everything rises and sets on leadership. And actually, I believe it has been best said and best taught by Eric Geiger and Kevin Peck in the book that they wrote, really Designed to Lead.
Mm-hmm.
And just mapping out this whole idea of leadership needing a strong conviction that it's important, and that from that conviction comes this amazing culture where it's expected and it happens. But even more importantly, that there's a construct that's developed. And the first time I heard Eric talk about that, it immediately resonated, and I could go back in many decades of leadership experience. And I could say that is so true. Mm. And it really needs to start at the top. This whole idea of leadership, culture, and succession planning, it cannot be relegated to whoever's responsible for people care and management within an organization or a church. It really has to be the heartbeat of the senior leader.
It's not an HR function.
No, it is not.
So first of all, most churches don't even have an HR function. But if they do, it can't be. It can't rest and reside there. The responsibility of development really is a top-down thing. And honestly, it's an every-level thing, which is one of the things that we'll get into as we move through the podcast. But
I mean, part of it is when you don't have that conviction, right from the get-go. And I mean, Eric and Kevin put it really well, right? They say, if you have constructs without conviction, you have apathy. If you have constructs without culture, you have exhaustion. And you have conviction without constructs, you have frustration, right? So the beauty of having conviction, culture, constructs, and having that be a part of the entire organization, not just in one department, set that foundation.
And the leader sets the tone for everything. And it takes that leader's focus to make it important and keep it important. Because let's face it, I mean, when you're stepping into that senior most role, there are so many things that are happening. You know, there's a ton of urgent things that always seem to surface. So you have to be rock solid in knowing that this is important and it's a priority and it has to happen. And it needs to be part of, you know, when it becomes part of the construct, that there is really a routine rhythm to it that holds people accountable for how things are progressing. So totally has to sit at the top.
Well, we've talked about it a little bit before, but I think one of the things that you're bringing out right now, when you look at culture and how you create, cultivate, embed culture, people far too many times forget that the structure, systems, processes, the constructs, if you will, that's what we mean when we say constructs. Those are things that really help to embed culture. But another thing that you mentioned was crisis and how a leader handles crisis, the judgments that they have there in crisis, the judgments that they have with people say a lot about a leader.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree with that, Todd.
So tell us a personal story about succession. Like, when have you seen succession go well? When have you seen it not go well?
Well, I would say that I was very fortunate right after I graduated from college. I went into Federated Department Stores, and they had an amazing conviction, culture, and construct for leadership development. And probably the most foundational leadership training that I had was during my 22 years with Federated Department Stores. And they went all out because they had corporate strategy that cascaded through the organization that translated into goals that were measurable so that there was a level of accountability and that performance was managed. And based on results, then it was easy for them to see.
You've already mentioned three of that part of the acronym for SMART goals.
Well, there you go. Well, exactly. But because they had that happening, they could enroll everyone, and then you could see who could rise up, who was really capable of high levels of performance. And once you see that, then you know who you want to invest in. Hmm. And then what's the training that comes alongside to say, all right, we know you've got it, and we're going to fuel that flame. And then by doing that, all of a sudden you're creating a talent pool that you can think differently about. Like, are you going to move them into other positions? How are you going to expand the knowledge base? You see things in them that, you know, oftentimes they don't even see in themselves. But then they become part of this roadmap of, well, if this opens, this is where this person goes. They can fit here. And then have a long-term outlook for how that person might be cultivated and communicating it to that person. So that I know, gee, senior leadership sees this in me and they're committed to me. And that drives all sorts of crazy loyalty. And I think that's really one of the reasons I stuck with Federated for 22 years. So they had it. Then I left them and went to work with Borders. And at the time, Borders was just under $1 billion. They wanted to double the size and they brought me in to say, okay, how do we explode this? But they had no no conviction. They had no culture. They had no construct. Hmm. Basically, everybody got the same percent raise every year. Mm. They got, here's a stock. They were given stock in the company. But this idea of really developing the skills to lead well. In fact, the organization had a lot of book lovers and very few leaders. Mm. And I said, wait a minute, I think you can have both. I think you can love books and you can be a great leader.
So was the growth accidental for them then?
Well, I think it was just exactly. But if you're going to take something that's just under $1 billion, you're going to take it to $2 billion. Yeah. It requires a lot of intentionality. And if you think about it.
Scalability issues.
Yeah, $1 million to $2 million is not the same as $1 billion.
Well, even think about the idea that you have a vibe, a brand, an experience in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And now you have to figure out how you replicate that. We're all about replication, right?
Yes.
Replicate that in California.
Yeah.
You know, and what does that look like? And what type of leadership does that take? Because you're far from the mothership once you do that. So cultivating the right store managers who are, in essence, the CEOs of their building, so that when I walked in, I mean, that was always the acid test. Someone would walk into a store in California, and if they could say, oh, I'm from Michigan. I went to the University of Michigan and I'm here and I feel like I'm home.
Yeah.
You knew.
Okay.
That you hit it.
So there's a couple of things I want to draw out from what Tammy said here. So you heard a couple of words that I want to key in on. So one is the whole idea of replication. Mm-hmm. You'll hear sometimes replicate, sometimes reproduce. Those are two different things. Replication is when you want to, for instance, in community campuses, we're going to have, you know, we're going to have a twin of where we are. We want it to have the same look and feel. It goes beyond just values. It goes beyond just what our mission is. It's going to be, we want it to all feel the same.
Yes.
And so I think that's important. It's important to know which type of plan that you're on. Are you reproducing or are you replicating? Another thing that you said earlier that I wanted to key on was really thinking about the horizontal and vertical. So what you were talking about, you were describing a democratization of leadership development at Federated, meaning they didn't just pick their ponies and pick the rock star people. That's one way to do it. One way is to say, hey, who are my high potentials? Who are my hyper hippos? Who are my high performing?
I like that.
Hyper hippos? Hungry hyper hippos. And I'm gonna give them the moon. I'm gonna give them everything they could possibly want. I'm gonna pour money on them. It's gonna be great for these people, but for the rest of you, thank you for showing up and doing your job. You're a workhorse. That's what we pay you to do. But these are the special people over here. What you're describing is horizontal. What you're describing is a democratization of development, meaning we are going to develop everyone to their level that they can rise. And that's what we want to do in the church, right? We're not saying everybody has to become the senior pastor, but what we are saying is that we want everybody to grow. Everybody's God's workmanship. Success is a progression all the way through the pipeline, but it is becoming who God has created you to be and multiplying yourself there. And so I love the fact that, you know, as a result of you coming up through that organization, it obviously had a great effect on who you became. And had you come up through another organization, you may not be here.
Yeah.
I mean, you may not be sitting here today. So,
so tell us.
Thank you, Federated Department Stores.
Thank you, Federated Department Store.
So walking into Borders then, tell us how you, like what you did then.
A lot of it was just beginning with the very basics. I think, first of all, it was getting the right people around the table to say, how do we define great leadership?
Yeah.
What are the skills and the abilities? So management leadership has to say, what are the expectations for leadership?
So just really uncovering what was.
Uncovering what it looks like.
Yeah.
And then translating it into what are the core skills, the fundamentals that people need to know to lead well. I mean, you really got to get practical. And then just saying, all right, now we need to begin to evaluate and have those conversations with leaders about, here's what I'm seeing, here's what the behaviors look like. And it's really the painful process of saying on a scale of 1 to 5, what does it look like when it exceeds an expectation? What does it look like when it's meeting an expectation? Yeah. And where does it need development? And then what are the programs that you need to develop or the incremental training that you need to provide where you see there's a huge gap in the organization? So it was an intense labor of love. And you can imagine, you know, an organization, you know, I was there in 1996 and it started in 1971 and no one ever sat down and said, I'm going to discuss you as a leader. That first conversation, really? So you're going to talk to me about how I communicate. You're going to talk to me about how I build my team, how I execute, you know, routine functions in the store. So it was a big culture shift, no question. But then as it slowly started to gain momentum, you know, about 4 years later, then we had the huge breakthrough on strengths analysis. So we were able to go in and say, what is the chemistry that makes for great leadership in a store? And we started to study the best of the best managers. The ones where you go in and you say the store feels great. Mm-hmm. And I don't even look at their results, but I go in and I just want to be here.
Yep.
Well, there's a direct correlation between that feeling and what happened. And what we found is that a great leader, it didn't matter where they were located, that they could be in some place that was really downtrending. It could be where the retail had moved. But the right stuff could make things happen. So we really dived in and we really tried to understand that. And then from that, we created balanced scorecards so that we could track and watch performance. And then we took the leaders who were really setting the pace and we did pull them out. And we said, okay, you've shown extraordinary leadership. Now you take on a corporate problem to solve this year. Mm. So it was an empowering and a trusting them to give great value back to the organization. So we had a president's council and there were all sorts of really exciting initiatives that would happen. But one thing I did and that in my role as the senior leader is every time a new general manager would come through, I didn't delegate setting the expectations or explaining the vision and the mission and the values of the organization to a trainer. I met with every one of them when they would come.
That's good.
So that they would hear that directly from me and I could hear any questions or objections mm-hmm. and then fold that in. But again, it goes back to the difference it makes if your senior leaders have that passion and they're willing to invest. Because I felt like if I could impart those seeds, that could be lasting. And then when I would visit them later, it was so easy to hold them accountable to what we had talked about and then what I was seeing in the store.
Yeah, totally.
What I loved about that, your answer is, as much as you were imparting seeds and meeting with the general managers and doing all that work, there's so often in the church this temptation to say, oh, hey, look what works over there. Mm-hmm. Let me just bring it in and to go straight to the constructs. But you started with really uncovering what was, right? Starting with the questions, uncovering the values there first before you even went to, oh yeah, so this is all the stuff that I learned or this is what else we need to do.
Well, and if you think about it, I mean, even in a bookstore, I mean, we were in different places and we assorted the store different. I mean, churches are different. And I think when you look at the communities where churches serve, there's different needs in that community and different people show up and they bring their best to develop what it is that that community needs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So they're inspired. I mean, there's some places it makes sense for a great children's ministry. There's other places that maybe that's not the need.
Yeah, especially if 80% of your church is under 30. And
right. So you still have to be sensitive to the uniqueness of where it is. But I still think there is something, you know, deep wired within leaders that can make them adapt and, you know, just, you know, experience great momentum.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, on the one hand, it's one thing for a pastor to work with staff members or for you to work with the general managers or paid employees. But maybe when you look at pastors and church leaders, them just wanting to mobilize the people in their pews, mm-hmm. you know, volunteers, individuals that are not being paid, not on payroll. How can pastors and church leaders better mobilize the pew sitters,
or even more specifically, I would say the many leaders like myself. You know, I mean, you know, we've always been active in church. Yeah. And, you know, when you're running, you know, large corporations, and then you come there and you say, all right, now what value do I have? And it's been very interesting to me how I think the church has really missed the potential in the pews.
Yeah. Come on.
Come on. No, I say this with great affection, but I think about even my personal journey. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I was in that senior role there, you know, I paid extraordinary money to be part of a CEO forum that got on a call once a quarter and could be mentored and shepherded by Henry Blackaby. Yeah. And that
awesome.
Maybe once or twice a year, we might have some type of a gathering. But I think leaders, when they're in the pews, there is a ministry need that I don't think the church always recognizes. They think, oh, well, okay, they're in leadership. They've got this together and I'm onto it. But those that are in the marketplace are desperate to be affirmed that this is my ministry,
yeah.
That this makes sense. And if you think about all the initiatives that are out there, Faith at Work, all the books that are being written, and just saying, you know, this is my holy assignment for this part in time, I don't think the church pays attention to that felt need that leaders have. So I think that's the first part of a huge opportunity. And so then there's the groups that gather within the church. And if you think about the organizations that exist today, like a C12 or a Convene, where they take business leaders that are Christians and they bring them together to wrestle business problems, but they're only coming together because they want it in the context of a biblical worldview. Yeah. They want to say, I'm a Christian, and how do I honor Christ in solving this business problem? So again, you have leaders who are spending huge amounts of money for that, and I contend that could be happening in the church.
Yeah. That's good.
And by it happening in the church, then it enables the church to be in deeper relationship with those leaders, to know them, and just to cultivate how they might be able to be actively involved in the church. And then there's that the last phase of reality. And I remember sitting on the plane and reading Bob Buford's book, Halftime.
Yep.
Is that as leaders grow and they achieve a certain level of success, they look at the last half of their life, they face their own mortality, and they say, I think there's something more. And if a church is nurturing the relationships with them, then all of a sudden the church can provide the places for those leaders to do something more. And up until that time, I think the leaders need to be invited in. Because if you're sitting there and you're wondering, well, okay, I didn't go to seminary, you know, I've not been a Bible teacher or whatever, am I really worthy or can I really do that kind of thing? The church needs to invite those leaders in to be part of something. And once the invitation's extended, you know, it's like opening a floodgate of opportunity. But the church has to meet the felt need of the leaders first, develop relationship with them. And then when God starts to move, be the place that provides an opportunity for them to serve and make a difference in the kingdom. Because otherwise, then they go over to the Halftime Institute and then they're out and maybe they're leading nonprofit ministries or they're doing, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think there's a lot that could be happening in the church.
Well, there's a lot of churches, there's a lot of pastors probably listening to this going, well, I don't understand all my key business leaders are out, they're serving on boards, they're leading up other nonprofits, or they're working in parachurch ministry. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that key business leaders are serving outside the church? From your perspective, having gone to
because I don't know that they've been invited or that what they have to give has been clearly seen by the church. A lot of times when you have, you know, people that have been successful in business, I mean, you often think of them in terms of, you know, these are people that could donate significantly. But even as a church, think of all the business leaders that go out and become part of a generosity movement.
Right.
Because the generosity movement isn't stirring even within the church. So I think it's just a recognition of what that is. And I know some pastors really seem to get the leadership message, you know, and they can preach it and they understand it and they talk about it a lot, and that can be very empowering. But I think others, you know, there may be just a little of intimidation. Yeah. Like, I'm running my church and here's somebody who's running a $1 billion company, you know, and just this thing of feeling less than, instead of meeting and saying, you know, you're here for a reason. You are in my church for a reason.
Yeah.
So Daniel and I were at a church that shall remain nameless not too long ago. I think I may have talked about this once on the podcast before. I'm not totally sure. But we were at a church and there were lay leaders present. So not quite half the room was lay leaders, but a significant portion. A lot of those lay leaders were financially, let's just say,
high capacity.
Yeah. They were capable of skipping a few days of work or to be with us. They were lay leaders that, you know, had been given some ministry within the church to do, yada, yada. These were high capacity people. I was intimidated by some of the people that were in the room, and I'm not terribly intimidated most of the time. But so I'm like, oh, you run like USA, this major company for the US, and you're here for pipeline coaching. Okay, this is going to be interesting. What was the most telling thing was when we asked, okay, what are your most significant leadership challenges? And so, you know, all the people in the room write up their leadership challenges. And so you have the staff who write up part of their challenges are all these lay people that, you know, don't get it or don't understand, or they can't trust them to execute, or they can't do this or that. And you have the lay people who are like, nobody's clear with me. Nobody asked me to do this. Nobody. And that's so good. There's really, I think that highlights the disconnect that's often there, especially with leaders, because a lot of times if a leader enters into a ministry, and I know I've said this on the podcast, you will only dump on a leader one time. And the next time their calendar is going to be full. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll give you a couple instances, but you know, man, use them for who God has created them to be. Yeah. And that's not to say that they're too good to rock babies or hold open doors. I mean, you know, they're more than willing to do that. But when it comes to leadership, when it comes to giving them significant ministry, we want to make sure we do that. All right. I'm going to move us into our fourth question. So how would you encourage the church members who work in the business world, you know, 40 plus hours a week, how would you encourage them to serve in their local church?
Well, I think you just need to step in somewhere. I mean, it has to begin somewhere, and go seeking that. And, you know, business leaders are good at assessing situations, defining opportunities, and it may be that they're in the church and they see a need that's not being addressed that they think that they could. I mean, even imagine if you're a business leader and you're in there and you say, I just want to go up and I'd like to start a ministry for other business leaders.
Yeah.
You know, we would like to have a discipleship group that is comprised of, you know, men, women, well, men with men, women with women. It usually does work better. That are carrying the same kind of load. And then let's just talk about it. So again, instead of, you know, just sending that type of activity outside the church, find ways to bring it in, to be in fellowship with each other, and then for the church to nurture and encourage that and support that. Because there's nothing like having that kind of fellowship, right, within the body. And then maybe what they have is someone on staff that helps facilitate that, you know, that can be there and can, you know, maybe offer, you know, the theology, the counsel that goes in and says, all right, now let's just step back and think about this. But, you know, that could be one obvious way. And then I think it's just really paying attention. I know for us, it was plugging in and leading ministry trips to Haiti. And so we were just so compelled that that's how we were going to serve and the things that we're going to do. And that's a lot of administration and planning and doing that. But more importantly, it was, what is the experience that we're creating for people as they are experiencing life change on a mission field? And how do we nurture that? How do we encourage that? you know, how do we help them understand their next step and level of commitment because of it? And I think it was just, we're going to go and we're going to plan activities on the mission trip. That might be something you do, but I think sometimes like a leadership perspective to that says, no, we're going to make this a heart development experience for you so that God can just unleash so many amazing things.
What I'm hearing from you is just the importance of for pastors and church leaders to know those who are in their pew. And maybe if the church is is under 100, then the pastor can know everyone. If it's larger than that, then you need to have systems of care in place. But it's important that, you know, from what you said about leading mission trips and leading the Bible study, and even just the pastor knowing the type of experience that individuals have, the only way that that can happen is if he or someone else knows the people.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's relationship. I mean, it really is relationship. But I'm like you, Todd. I think that sometimes it's easier for someone who is in the for-profit space, that's a Christian, to say, oh, I'll go serve on that nonprofit board.
Yeah. I know what that looks like.
Yeah.
I know what to do. At least I understand, you know, business rules.
Exactly. And then I can find my value and affirmation because that nonprofit board is going to be loving you.
Yeah.
Because you're going to bring insights and perspective that's really going to advance. That same thing could be happening in the church.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, that I would encourage pastors to do, so in DC, one of the ways that we, made nice with areas and, it made sure that when we went into a new place to launch a campus, we got in with the local Chamber of Commerce. And so we actually would, if they wanted us to do stuff, we would, I mean, actually here in Williamson County and just down the road from Nashville, I'll do, this month, I'll do a session for 200 and some business leaders. And then later in September, I'll do more stuff for business leaders. And in that way, I mean, I'm no longer working at a church, but I'll certainly be talking about my church and I'll certainly be talking about Lifeway. I think in that way, pastors listening to this, there's probably not a whole lot of other pastors that are thinking about their local Chamber of Commerce and participating in it and investing in it and investing in relationships there. And that could be a very, very valuable resource of leaders for your church. Not only that, evangelism.
Yes.
Place for evangelism for your church. Because once they see you're, you know, legit and you're a strong person, a strong leader, then they're certainly going to want to hang out with you. And there will come a time in their life that they're going to have a crisis moment. And if you're the only pastor they know, you're the one they're going to call and you're going to get to minister to that family.
Well, and I love that you are reaching out. You know, just even, I mean, I get excited just thinking of the fact that you're going to go and you're going to talk leadership. Yeah. And obviously they're going to know that that's from a Christian. Yeah, but that's a Christian, from a Christian worldview.
Totally.
You're going to talk and they're going to say, here's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for, it's like I sit there and okay, now I need to practically apply this. You know, and Jesus was so amazing with his disciples and how he taught them how to practically apply what was happening. I mean, he set those expectations with them. He told them exactly what to do. Watch me. Now you go do this. He was behaviorally specific. I mean, he did all of those things. So we have this amazing model for what leadership looks like. But to be able to sit here and say, okay, I hear you. And, you know, let's process, you know, what would Jesus do? What is the right response to wrestling and solving that problem in a way that would honor God?
Yeah, I love that. Love that. So our last question can be taken at a couple different angles. You know, on the one hand, you can address this question to the pastor or the church leader saying, okay, how do I do succession well here? But also to the business leader who's listening and being like, hey, I'm not a pastor. I'm a member at our church, but I want to be a part of this as well. So the question is this: what are some ways to pour into the next generation of leaders to make sure they're ready to take your place?
Well, I think it goes back to, all right, so we're going to assume that all of a sudden they woke up with a great conviction, right?
Yes.
And they're ready to start a cultural change and that there's a construct. one of the questions that I was always asked early on was, okay, Tammy, tell me who you're developing. And sometimes in the church, we talk about that. Who are you investing in? Who are you pouring your life into? Yeah. But at all levels, being able to say, all right, now you're in a role where you have a team. Who will take your place? And just even the charge that says you need to be thinking about who you're hiring on your teams, who you're working with, and who can you develop to do what you do so that you can be free to do something else.
Yeah, when you're 30.
Exactly.
Not only when you're 65.
Yeah. Right? And you know what? That's just kind of a culture. It's a conviction and a cultural attitude. Hmm. And then as that begins to get more momentum, then you can look at what are the constructs that are available, which again is why I'm just such a huge fan and advocate of the pipeline, because it really maps out here's where you need to go. And what I love about it is that there's a sequence. Hmm. Now, every leader comes to the assignment with different experiences, right? So I may have had that experience, but I didn't have that one. But I think with the pipeline and having a pipeline construct means that you're still going to run that leg of the race, even if you're competent in it, because who knows, you may pick up something else, but it builds or it lays the foundation for the next thing that's going to be built on it.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think that's so important. And then you avoid the gaps.
Yes, that's true.
You know, you're really going into a training here and you're working the muscles in the right order that they need to be worked in. Yeah. Of course, you can tell I'm like not a heavy gymmer, but I'm just saying, you know, it's that principle. It's really building up the body and the character of the leaders.
Yeah, because we've all seen people at the gym who are top heavy.
Yes, yes. Or even athletes.
And their legs are like, I guess you spend all your time doing your biceps.
Well, you just see that distortion in anybody that's, you know, in a certain kind of athletic discipline. Oh. But to say, here it is, and then this is where this leads to. And once you master this level, then you're ready to go to the next thing. Yeah. And again, having a matrix or a grid that helps you understand what are the fundamental competencies that need to be mastered, and then how to build on it. And then if you have someone who's really dedicated to your advancement and to really supporting you, they're going to accelerate you through that.
Yeah,
they're not going to hold you back. It's not like, oh, well, you have to spend another 3 weeks on this. You know, the pipeline needs to be dynamic so people can flow through it at the speed.
And I think, too, it's important to understand that, you know, you can't digitize development. Once again, we are talking about transformation occurs in the context of a relationship. What I love about competency-based development is this. Someone could take 1,000 hours in conflict management and still check all the boxes, pass everything, every test you gave them, but it's only through experience and coaching, the coaching piece specifically, where you say, yep, this person is ready, or no, they're not, based on what I'm seeing in your life, based on what I'm, you know, trying to help you walk through based on this situation. Let's walk through this situation that, you know, we just saw. And I think that's so vitally important to give people a framework to work through. But then, you know, also having the philosophy to back it up.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said too, that you don't have to master all of it, but you need to have an appreciation for it. Because the other thing that happens is I'm not good at everything. You're not good at it. I mean, we can't be good at everything. Yeah. But if we go through the pipeline, we recognize where our strengths are.
Yeah.
And as we grow to more senior levels of leadership, we know how we need to surround ourselves with people that are really good in those places.
Yeah. I love that.
Just
for
to complete the whole, you know, complete the whole leadership team.
Mm. Yeah, because competency-based education is, there are a few colleges and universities and seminaries that are piloting, but it's by far, it's not fully adopted yet. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would love to see, and part of it is they have a lot to lose and they have to figure out tuition
and all that. Mm-hmm.
But I would love to see the church to lead the way in this, because competency-based education just makes so much sense, right? I mean, how often have we sat in classes and it was like so irrelevant? right? And I'm like, what use is this? This is pointless. And then other times you sit through something and gobble it all up because it's relevant. It's, you know, hitting a felt need. It's what you're going through at the moment. And that's the beauty of having the competencies and having an approach that is knowledge, skill, and experience-based coaching, knowledge, coaching and skill.
Well, and I'm with you. I mean, I ache to see the church lead and influence and make a difference and to be the place where the best practices are found.
Anybody should be good at equipping people. If anybody should be good at developing people, it should be us, because it's the one thing that we're supposed to do as believers, not just as church leaders, but as believers. We're all called to make disciples, not just be disciples and reproduce ourselves wherever we are.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Good deal. Well, thank you so much, Tammy, for being with us today. Thank you for coming to our Pipeline Conference this fall.
I can't wait.
It's going to be a very, very good time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.